This is the Cafe Racer Podcast, episode 23 for September 27th, 2012. I'm your host, Crash. Okay, so as usual, we're going to start off with some news, but I was able to get an interview with Chris Cook from the Cafe Racers Japan documentary, and so I'm going to stick that at the end, so I'm going to try to get through the news real quick and not run my mouth for too long, so you guys can hear the interview I did. Chris was a great person to interview, and it was really awesome connecting with him, and I hope that all of you go out and check out his movie that's coming out on October 6th. You can find it at caferacersjapan.com. So, like I said, on with the news. Apparently, a month ago, on August 25th, I missed the Vintage Motorcycle and Scooter Festival in Tacoma, Washington, which kind of saddens me because it's only about 2 hours from my house. I definitely would have liked to go. There was a concourse where they had all the bikes out, and if you go to cycleworld.com, you can check out some of the photos they have. There's some really, really awesome-looking old bikes in there, including an as-raced Manx Norton, complete with number plate instead of the headlight and all that sort of stuff. And they also did a 110-mile ride over to Mount Rainier, which is pretty cool. So, like I said, head on over to cycleworld.com and check out those pictures if you want to get an idea of what you missed and what I missed. Up next, you guys should be aware by now that I'm a bit of an adventure bike nut as well. And KTM has released official pictures of the 1190 Adventure. And I got to say, it looks good. I'm really curious to know how it's going to perform versus the other ones. I mean, the KTM 990 was always the best bike in the dirt of all the adventure bikes, and I want to know how this one does comparatively. You know, is it better in the dirt than all the other ones still? Is it not as good as the 990 in the dirt? Also, the KTMs have been known to not quite last as long in terms of mileage as some of the other ones, and I'd like to see how this one does. It's got the LC8 V-twin that's used in the RC8. It's got about 150 horsepower, which is pretty serious, especially if you're going to take this thing off-road. I mean, you know, you've got 650 thumpers cruising around out there with less than a third of that, so it's a lot of power to take off-road. Like I said, you know, we'll have to wait until it's been out for a little while and some people have taken it out and really beat the crap out of it, but I think it should be exciting. Also, in new bikes, I mean, it's not really new per se, but it's coming out internationally. I don't think it's coming to the United States, but it's the Honda CB1100. It's a pretty retro-style standard bike. It looks pretty much like, any older CB, just updated a little bit. You know, the wheels look straight off an old CB1000 or something like that. So anyway, I mean, it looks like a nice platform if you're going to cafe a modern bike. I think, you know, you could totally cafe this thing and it would look right. You know, it wouldn't look like you tried to do it to a ZX6, because I'm pretty sure that's called a Street Fighter. If you did it to, I know on the Cafe Racer TV show they did it to a modern bike, and that it looked good, but it didn't have that retro kind of style. And this definitely does, but it's still new. And it's got that 1100cc four-cylinder engine in there, so it's definitely going to get up and move pretty well. It's just a shame it's not coming to the United States. Two quick tools I want to talk about. If you're out there looking for a chain breaker, you might want to look at the Motion Pro lightweight chain breaker and chain press. It's a complete kit that's got all the stuff you need to break a chain, and it comes in a little pouch that's got room for some extra stuff, like your extra links and stuff if you pop them off and you want to save them. The only thing, I guess, that's really different about it than any of the other ones is it's really lightweight. So if you're looking for that sort of thing, it's one to look at. The tool that I really kind of want to talk about is the new Motion Pro Bead Pro. It's a pair of levers that are sort of hard for me to explain. One's got sort of a fork, and the other one's got a tongue that fits in between the fork, the teeth on the fork. And you stick them in, and you kind of squeeze them together, and that provides leverage to pop your tire off the bead. They retail for $80, $79.99, and they look like a really easy way to break the bead on your, you know, your tubeless tires and some of that sort of stuff. And it's got tire spoons on the other side for installation on the bead. I've actually never tried to do that with a motorcycle tire, but this look, from what I've seen, you know, the other ways of breaking the bead, like the Aero Stitch sells a bead breaker tool that's sort of like a big plastic wedge, and you just hit it with something hard, like a rock. You find a big heavy rock or something, you just whack the crap out of it. This looks like a little bit more controlled and possibly a little bit easier way to get your tire off the bead. So check it out, Motion Pro Bead Pro. One last thing I want to talk about before we get into the interview is Iron and Air magazine. If you haven't checked out Iron and Air magazine, go to ironandair.com and take a look at it. Also, check them out on Facebook. I think they're facebook.com/ironandair. Just type it into the search. You'll find them. It's a really awesome magazine. And if you're into bike pictures, I mean, it's just one beautiful bike picture after another. And there's some really good articles about the builders or the riders and that sort of stuff. But for me, the thing that I like the most is just watching their Facebook updates and all the really cool pictures of stuff. It's given me so many ideas of things I could do to my bike or, you know, to try on another bike maybe in the future or whatever. So check it out, ironandair.com. So this is the part where we get into the interview. So I'm just going to go ahead and do the regular show wrap-up stuff here. And, you know, don't hit stop. Just keep listening for the interview that I did with Chris Cook. Like I said, it was a great interview. We talked for about an hour. I recorded 26 minutes or so of it, like the middle bit. We talked for a few minutes before and then for quite a while after. Like I said, you know, if any of you guys have anything going on in the world of cafe racers or motorcycles in general, and you want to give me a holler if you have, you know, some awesome tool that you love or a bike that you have built or anything, and you want to put it out there on the show, just get in touch with me, you know, let me know. I'd love to talk to anyone out there who's listening about motorcycles or anything really. So if you have any suggestions or you want to contact me, you can find me on caferacerpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/caferacerpodcast, on Twitter at caferacerx. I think that's about, oh yeah, the website, caferacerpodcast.com. You know, if you post on a comment on any of the forum, on any of the blog posts on there, I will find it because I approve all those to make sure that no bots make it on there, any spam bots, because that's kind of annoying. But I was talking to Chris Cook actually after we recorded, and it's kind of funny, you know, I got to that point where, you know, I wasn't active on Facebook really all that much or Twitter, and then all of a sudden I was, and I was just important enough to get spam, and it was almost like a sort of a badge of, you know, achievement. It's like, hey, achievement unlocked. You have become just active enough to make people want to spam you. And so, you know, the Facebook community's been growing, and that's been awesome. It's just, you know, we've got about 63 likes, and I, you know, it's really cool. There's some people who posted up some really awesome stuff on there, so if you want to check it out, facebook.com/caferacerpodcast. Follow me on Twitter. I go through sort of fits and starts of whether I'm posting a lot on Twitter or not. Depends on what's going on in my life. Like, you know, when I'm doing regular work days, I tend to not post a whole lot. But if I go out on a big long ride, I'll usually post up some stuff about it. Or like when I went to Utah, I was posting all the time because we were all kind of communicating via Twitter. So if you want to kind of keep track of what's going on or what's going on with the show, every time there's a new episode up, I put it on Twitter first. So check it out there. Without further delay, let me play this interview. So like I said, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, here on the podcast, we've got Christopher Andrew Cook, the director behind Cafe Racers Japan. How's it going, Chris?
Oh, it's going great.
Good. So as we were talking a little bit pre-recording, you started out in sort of the LA, New York thing. How did you get to Japan? You know, you don't sound Japanese, and I can see you. You don't look Japanese, so.
Right. Yeah, no. I grew up in New York, so that's my hometown. And then in 1997, I came to Japan, and I just came on a short visit. And then in 1999, I came here, and I lived 4 years till 2003. And then I returned to New York, and then I was in New York for a while, and I moved to Los Angeles just for work. And then I was in LA for 3 years. and that's where I bought my my Bonneville. And I actually enjoyed. Everyone talks about traffic in Los Angeles being crazy, and it is. But you know, driving your Bonneville up the Malibu coastline is pretty nice.
I have a dream of one day riding that exact road, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, you know, you after work you can just hop on it to unwind, and the next thing you know, you're in Santa Barbara. So you know, it's really great. But I was in LA for 3 years, and then I moved to Japan almost 3 years ago. And so that's where I'm in. Now I'm in Yokohama, which is right outside of Tokyo.
Yeah, there's actually I'm in the Navy, and there's a good chance that I may end up in Japan.
Okay.
At some point, but so you mentioned your Bonneville. Was that your first bike, or did you have bikes before that?
Yeah, that was the first bike I bought. The first one I had is a dirt bike Yamaha 80 when I was a kid.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I got two older brothers, so they would usually get the bikes. I get to ride them.
Yeah. I'd have to say that starting out on the dirt is the way that everybody has always said. You know, you're a lot better off on the road if you start out on the dirt.
Yeah.
I did not. So, I watched some really cool videos of some guys the other day, and I was like, "Wow, I suck at riding a motorcycle." Yeah. I mean, I don't really suck that bad, but you know, watching some guys just do some not even super hard things, but just some things that I cannot do, I'm like reminded of, you know, just how good you can get on a motorcycle out there, and it's really fantastic to watch.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun.
So, you moved to Japan, and
right.
Do you ride anything now?
When I moved here, I bought a. I went from the Bonneville. I moved out here. I bought a Honda GB250. It's like a 1980s one owner. You know, this is like, you know, this guy hadn't driven it in a while. The had the original tires on it.
Oh wow!
They're all like kind of cracked and all. I was kind of nervous driving it home in the rain. So, but I took it home, fixed it up. So I had that for a while. I was driving that. You know, I had to get used to it. It's, you know, it's a smaller bike,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of fun, you know. And I used to drive that through the city.
Nice.
And I, you know, like I was telling you before, it's a great city to ride. If you ever get a chance, even if you come on vacation, you can rent a bike or something. It's great. You know, you can go from downtown to the mountains to the beach. You know, all in a day. And the best part is the Shuto Expressway, which is, you know, just this great highway. It's like four stories high. It's kind of like a video game. It's got these great curves. It just cuts through downtown Tokyo. And it's just a blast.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a video game guy. And I've noticed like any game that has Japan has this elevated highway that you can ride
right.
down. And I'm sure it's not an exact copy of the Shuto Expressway, but it looks really cool. And movies, you see it in movies, and it looks
right.
really exciting.
Yeah, it's something great to experience, and that's why I actually put it in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I put a part of that in there because to me, that's the most exciting thing. To me, it's just, you know, I'm kind of in my own scene here, so it's one person, one bike on a road, and there's just nothing better.
Yeah, that's actually a great segue into the movie. It's a documentary, a pretty short little documentary that I was lucky enough to get sort of a sneak peek on, and I really enjoyed it. Like I was telling you before, when I first watched it, I kind of was like, okay, I'm not really sure what I think. And then as I thought about it, and then I watched it again, and I really, especially the second time, I really enjoyed it a lot. So if anybody out there gets a chance to see it twice.
Yeah, no, we're going to actually release it online.
Okay.
On October 6th.
Cool. I told some other guys about it, actually, to look forward to it coming out. The guys at Dime City Cycles. I was talking to Chris today, actually.
Okay.
So many Chris's. Me, you, him.
Right, right.
I was talking to him today, and I said, hey, did you hear about this documentary that's coming out? I sent him your website. So hopefully, because those guys are way more plugged into the social network thing than I am. So, and I try, but they've been doing it longer, so.
Yeah, you're building.
Yeah, I'm working on it. So tell me a little bit about this documentary. You said pre-recording that it you kind of started out in one place and ended up with a totally different film. So
it went through three different phases. So we started in March 2011, and you know, shortly after the earthquake came, and so that, you know, things kind of slowed, you know, traffic lights stopped and there was rolling blackouts. So for a couple of months there, you know, we had to put a stop. But I have to tell you, during that time, I would ride in the city by myself, and it was pretty amazing because the city isn't just incredibly crowded. But during that time, it was like a ghost town. And riding through it on a bike, man, it was, you know, you're in this huge metropolis by yourself. It was pretty exciting. But after that, we started off, and the initial approach to the film was to work on the bike builders and the motorcycle scenes. Because for me, you know, Cafe Racer, you know, the bike is number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sound of the bike. It's the feel of the bike. It's the look of the bike. And so that's how I thought it would be here. So that's how I approached it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a uniquely American thing, but that's definitely the sentiment in the United States, that it's the bike.
Right. Yeah, the bike is everything. And mm-hmm. It's bike from the ground up. And when I got here, it's, you know, it's different. And so we had to change that. And so it was a learning process, you know, for me. It's like, okay, well, now I did a little short on Ritmo Sereno. He does some BMW builds out here. And other people we approached, British Beat and these other people, they didn't want to be filmed. They're just really not interested in it. So, so we had to, you know, reassess things. So we were like, okay, well, bike builds, not part of the scene. But in exploring that, we came across some interesting characters. And we came across some of the rockers here and some of the cafe racers here. And the scene's kind of divided into two sections. You have the rockers who, as you saw in the film, are hardcore rockers. They have the vintage, you know, British bikes. And they wear the leather jackets and they listen to Gene Vincent music. And then you have the cafe racers who ride Japanese bikes and listen to punk rock music. And they're very different. They don't really get along, although they're both kind of in the same scene. They're kind of opposing, you know, scenes within themselves. So
yeah.
So we focus on them as a second one, as our second approach. So we did some interviews with them, and part of that's in the film. And then the third part was just focusing on the city and the atmosphere of the scene. Because to me, the main character is Tokyo itself, because that's what makes the movie unique. That's what makes it different than Cafe Racer, you know, Brazil, or Cafe Racer Africa, or Kenya, or, you know, Canada.
I want to see that movie, though. Cafe Racer Kenya? I want to see that.
It'd be great, though. And, you know, it was just like, it's the city, where you ride is as important to me as what you ride. So I thought that was a really great atmosphere. So we wanted to get that in the film. And so that was the third part. So really, I look at the film as two sections. One is the riders, and one is where they ride.
Something that struck me, I don't want to spoil the film, but something that struck me was especially the rocker guy that you interviewed, his, you know, like I've got regular old jeans and some Dainese motorcycle boots that I wear, and I've been wearing them for years. I've had the soles replaced in them. Like they're starting to get worn out, you know, they don't look super awesome. And my jacket is just a jacket. I don't have the asymmetrical zipper Marlon Brando jacket. And he was just, I mean, the 60s just stepped right. He just like stepped right out of the 60s, you know, like full perfect outfit.
Right. And hair and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Had the pomp, the whole deal. And that was something I noted. Like he was very focused on the fashion. Like that was very
absolutely
key.
Yeah. That was a surprise for me when I interviewed them, that in with the Cafe Racers and the Rockers, they talk about the fashion more than anything. And, I think that's interesting. And I hope when people watch the movie, I mean, I think some people will be excited about that. They go, you know, I think that's really cool. And some people might look at it, well, you know, I don't know, is the bike a fashion accessory, you know, or is it really their passion? And you know, I kind of left that up in the air. I think, you know, for me, it's you should kind of decide, and after listening to them, you can decide. But the fashion is really important to the scene, and that's, you know, I didn't ask them fashion questions. I mean, that's what I asked them: what makes a cafe racer? And the first thing they talk about is the leather jacket, the leather boots, and like I was telling you, there's different categories. For instance, the rockers, there's kind of rules you have to be in their scene. You have to have a British bike, and it has to be a vintage British bike. So if you have a 59 Triton, you're in great shape.
Yeah, I think if you have a 59 Triton in any scene, you're in great shape, to be honest. But
right, so you know, if you have a new Bonneville, it's not going to work.
Yeah, I'm out of luck.
You have to wear the leather jacket, the leather pants, the leather boots, the white socks. You have to listen to Eddie Cochran music, you know, Gene Vincent, that kind of stuff. So yeah, you have to be like hardcore all the way. Otherwise, you can't. You know, it's really, you know, it feels like you're weakening the scene if you're not into that. You know, and in the movie, that's what they came up with. That's what they say. You know, what makes the scene strong. It has to be this like perfect leather jacket and 60s look and a whole rocker's lifestyle, which is, you know, that's what they believe in. That's what they get excited about. But the bike is kind of, you know, like I said, it's not the most important thing. I think the most important scene is the look that they really like.
I'm not sure. You know, I've never been to Japan, but motorcycles, I feel like motorcycles are just more prevalent in Japan and less of a focus. Like here in the States, you know, there's a relatively small group of riders in the country, and for them, they're focused on the bike.
Right.
Whether you're in the cafe racer scene or the adventure touring scene or the Harley Davidson thing, although they have a lot of clothes, but, you know, there's the bike is sort of a very central part. You know, you're a rider who rides a certain bike as opposed to a guy dressed up. You know, you're a cafe racer because you wear these clothes. Right. And a lot of people ride bikes.
Right.
Just for transportation or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't, that might have something to do with it. I don't know. I'm just kind of pulling that out of thin air.
Yeah. It's a different approach. I mean, it's all about the fashion is number one. You know, like even when we were filming, they were like, I was like, you know, can we turn off the AC so we can get a better sound? And, you know, guys, you know, they got makeup on and stuff. So it's, you know, it's, they're really like, oh, you know, can't do that. You're going to have to, you know, they're really concerned about their image, not what they are, but how they look.
Right.
And that's how it is. But, you know, the cafe racer scene, though, those guys drive Japanese bikes and they listen to punk music. And they're really into fashion too, but it's a different fashion. So it's kind of interesting. You have these two, like, not opposing forces, but they're like derivatives, both in the cafe racer so-called scene, but totally separate. And they both kind of like dislike each other. Like, you're not a real cafe racer, and like the rockers say you're not a real cafe racers, and the cafe racers say you're like the cosplay and you dress up, and it goes back and forth. So I mean, it's hopefully I think. Recently, they're getting a little closer.
Yeah,
and you know, they're trying to get events where they can do things together. But it's just, you know, two different forces in the same. That's why I put them both in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to be fair, but they're both based. Fashion is still key for either one.
It sounds a little bit like the mods and rockers back in the '60s.
Right.
Only, I feel like the cafe racers in Japan and the rockers in Japan have a lot more in common than the mods and the rockers.
Right. Now, they have a mod scene here, too.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, I was going to do a documentary on them, but some of those people in the mod scene are in the cafe racer scene.
Hmm.
And so that makes it even a little more confusing.
That is interesting. I mean, we did a... The Cretans, I am not any affiliated with them in any way, but I've hung out with them a couple times. They did a cafe racer, like a mods and rockers event here in Seattle. And I went and shot some video, and I mean, like super low quality cell phone stuff, but some really quick little clips of some of the hilarity that ensued. But you know, there was definitely, I think, you know, because we're, none of us were really a part of that culture then that were there. And so it was a really cool opportunity for a bunch of people who ride old Vespas and a bunch of people who ride, you know, a very odd assortment of motorcycles to just get together and hang out. That was actually right. I'm not sure. I don't know how big on the news this got. It was big here because it happened here. There's a bar in Seattle. It's like a coffee bar called Cafe Racer. And there was a shooting there maybe a week before this this event, the Mods and Rockers thing. So pretty much everybody, all the scooters had a black on that like front luggage rack they have. They had like a black band that had the date in like green on it, and like pretty much everybody there had something sort of like a memorial to the people there. And so this kind of thing that overshadowed a little bit the event this year. But it was still a lot of fun. It was really cool. And, you know, it was nice that however many, you know, 50-something years, we're not punching each other in the face at a party.
Yeah. I heard there's a big scene in Texas, actually, where the Mods and Rockers do events together.
Yeah, that's actually kind of where it started in the United States, was in Texas. It's like it's a huge event, like really, really big, and maybe one day I'll go.
Yeah, it sounds great. But here they have some of them are the same people, like, for they'll dress up in the Mods things and they'll drive the Vespa, and that same guy will turn around and hop on his BSA and so with the leather. So it depends on the day and the event.
That's not like me personally. I would have nothing against owning a Vespa. I would ride the crap out of it, but I'd wear the same clothes, you know. It wouldn't matter to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. It's just like, you know, when I started doing this documentary, I was kind of, I had to reassess everything because I just thought it was about the bikes and the builds. But it's really, I think the image is just number one here.
Yeah. That, when you started talking about how a lot of the builders didn't want to be filmed and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It kind of, now I kind of have a better understanding why, I used to have a Kawasaki Z1, and it was a 1973 four-cylinder Kawasaki, and it's from Japan's Kawasaki, and I would see some of the most amazing builds of those bikes like in pictures, but could never track anybody down who actually worked on them. It seemed like they were. There was this like ethereal group of Z1 Illuminati working in Japan, making these beautiful motorcycles that I would see fleeting glimpses of, but you couldn't get in touch with any of them. Like, how did you do that? Or do you make that part all the time? And can I buy one from you? Go ahead.
No, I totally agree. When I did that, we did a short little film, like 2 minutes long, on Ritmo Sereno, who does those great BMW builds. And he's like the most humble guy. You know, he's like, you know, I'm still a student. I'm still learning. Every day is a new adventure. And he's really shy. And I think that's why he didn't want to be, you know, I gave him his own little 2 minutes. But he's like, you know, I don't want to be in that scene because it's just not me. And so, but when you get to the Rockers, it's the opposite. They're, they already think they're pretty famous, you know, they all have like stage names and, you know, a lot of attitude. So it's two opposing forces, completely different. The builder guy is just like, his work kind of speaks for himself. Whereas the Rocker guy, it's just, they just, you know, they like the attention.
Yeah. I guess, I'm not super knowledgeable about Japanese culture or anything, but you almost have that sort of, like with the builders, you almost have that sort of like very, very well-skilled like craftsmen who just, you know, I make the bike and then I give it to, you know, it's a tool and then I give it to the person, you know, and they do what they want to do. But that's it.
Right.
Do you do you have anything else going on right now that you want to, you know, other than the Cafe Racer Japan thing? Did you like what do you do when you're not making a documentary about cafe racers in Japan?
Well, we finished a short film that we're doing. It's called Short Mail, and it's probably come out beginning of next year. And then we have this year we're doing two other short films. So I have myself, and I have a small group of people. They're all volunteers, and we all work together. They're all Japanese. And we make short films. This is our main thing. And I wanted to make the documentary on Cafe Racers because, as a, you know, me personally, I just love Cafe Racers. So I thought it'd be interesting to see what it's like here. And like I was telling you, I really hope that, if anything, people are inspired by this film and they, you know, start making their own Cafe Racer film, because I'm curious what it's like in other places. Like here in the big city, it's great, but you know what's it like in smaller towns or out west or in, you know, different countries. So I'm excited. You know, there's lots of information on where it started in Ace Cafe. That's great. I'd like to see where it's going.
Yeah, I would too personally. I think that you know, if more people would kind of broadcast themselves out there a little bit, that would be awesome to see. Just what's going on.
Yeah, they're all online. We should put them all together in just one huge film of different things. But it's really great because everyone's very passionate. And I think that's wonderful. And I think that's what drew me to the scene. I think what people hopefully will like about the film is, whether you agree with these people or not, you know, at least they're passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could definitely get that.
Yeah, if you're not passionate about the bike, or you're passionate about the fashion, you're passionate about the scene, still it's a great passion. So that's really great. And like I said, the atmosphere here is really great. So it's great filming. It's a great place to film. It's an interesting city. And we have a couple short films we're doing. And we really try to make about two films a year. And we have completed two this year, and we're starting production in November for our next film.
Cool. So, one more time, when's Cafe Racer Japan coming out?
Yeah, so we're going to release it online on October 6th.
Okay.
And it's a short film. It's only 15 minutes long.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw it, when I watched it, I was like, wait, was that the whole thing? Or did I get a preview? And then I realized it was the whole thing, I was like, okay, let me watch that again. Because it's only 15 minutes. I've got plenty of time.
It's 15 minutes. You know, we have the two different perspectives on the scene for the interviews. A lot of visual imagery, so less than half the movie is dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and I didn't want to do your typical like talking heads documentary. So there is some interviews, of course, but a lot of visual imagery. I think there's lots of film footage of the city, and I think the music and the sound, I think is really, in the color, I think really important. I think it gives you a great atmosphere of what it's like here.
Yeah. Where can people find this then on October 6th? Available where?
So yeah, we're gonna release it on our Vimeo site.
Okay.
And I'm gonna post it on everywhere possible. If you go to caferacersjapan.com, it'll be up there. We'll post it there, and you know, you can link to Vimeo. And on that Vimeo site, there's also the Ritmo Sereno one, if you wanted to see that, if you're interested in the bike builds.
I am, actually. I'm probably gonna go check that out right after this.
Yeah. And so it's all in the same place, but October 6th we're gonna release it. The movie's done, we just wanted to finish it up. And we had some really great support. We had some people online. We went to Indiegogo. We had a short campaign.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that was really nice. And you know, people, you know, help you a little financially, but also it's just connecting with people.
Yeah,
you know. It's really great.
I agree. You know, if it wasn't for, the little show that I do, I wouldn't have any idea this exists. And I'm quite pleased to have found out that it exists and to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, I know. So, it's great, especially for me. You know, I'm here in Tokyo, and it's great to connect with people, you know. And it's great. Yeah, I love your show, and, you know, I hope you get more people to listen to it.
Thanks.
Because, yeah, you know, because... You know, it's great. Podcasts are great. And, you know, especially for me, I can listen to them on the train.
Yeah.
A lot of commuting time. And, you know, you stay connected with things, so you don't feel so isolated. And like I said, I just, you know, I think it's a you know, Cafe Racer. I think in cinema, too, it's such a, you know, globally you can connect with people, you know. And, you know, this movie, you know, it's in Japanese, so it's subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason we kept it kind of short. And, you know, our next movie, it has no dialogue at all. So, you know, it's just really about connecting with people. And I think it's a really great opportunity. So I'm really happy.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, if you have anything else, you know, ever in the future that you want to talk about, by all means, let us know. Or me, I guess, because I'm the one-man band over here. So.
Yeah, great. No, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. I'll talk to you later.